What is going on, folks? We are back again, this time to talk wide receivers. This is Building the Board, brought to you by ONTAP Sportsnet. I'm joined by our friend Tom Cavanaugh here today. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well, man. I'm really excited to talk about wide receivers. It's probably like my first or second favorite position to scout, and I'm really glad to be here talking it with you.
Yeah, and this is the big one, right? This is the one that everyone wants to hear about.
Yeah, I mean, this class is pretty insane top to bottom. I feel like they really put themselves on the map. If they weren't already on the map at the combine, they really put themselves on the map to where, like, everyone's buzzing about them now. And luckily for the Bears, they need a receiver, and this is a class to get one.
Yeah, they need at least a receiver, maybe two or three. But so as we've been doing with all these shows, we're opening it up with talking about a few Bears-specific questions. So the first thing we want to do is take a look at the Bears roster and see what they have at receiver currently. So pulling this up, I got DJ Moore. We all know DJ Moore is there. Velus Jones still on the roster another 2 years, I believe. And then Tyler Scott's got 3 years left under contract. And Nasimba Webster has just been the guy you can't get rid of. He's going to be here till the day we die. But Tom, what do you think about the Bears wide receiver room as it currently stands?
Well, DJ Moore is an absolute stud. I feel like he really put himself in that conversation of like being a legit top 10 receiver last year. So, I mean, you obviously feel great with what you have in him. You have a true wide receiver one, which, you know, a lot of teams can't say that. But the rest, I mean, they could all be replaced. You said Velus Jones has 2 years left. I mean, he could be cut next year. I don't mean to throw him under the bus, but like he can't even get on the field when like wide receiver three was pretty much up for grab last year once Chase Claypool got traded. So yeah, if Mooney is gone, I mean, wide receiver two and three are wide open. You kind of like some flashes you saw from Tyler Scott, but not enough to where like you're relying on him in a meaningful role by any means.
Yeah, Scott, you feel like, you know, maybe he can be wide receiver four and you feel okay about it, but if he's three, you're a little nervous. And with Velus, was he even playing any Gunner last year or anything? Do you remember?
I mean, I remember there was games he was like a healthy scratch. So like, it's just been rough. And if you remember, Luke Getsy was like one of his biggest advocates when they drafted him, and now he's gone. So like, again, his pathways to the field, like, I don't know, man, it's a rough situation.
He's a big running back. That's what we
there got. You go. Change from running back. Change from running back.
Hey man, every time he got a handoff, felt like he made a little noise.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
So next we want to talk about what the Bears might be spending on draft capital at the wide receiver spot. And I mean, personally, I think you can expect a wide receiver just about anywhere in the draft, given their roster situation. But what do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be in play from 9 to any point of the draft. Because again, like we just mentioned, they need a wide receiver 2 and 3. Shane Waldron, I know he runs like a lot of different formations, but at his core, I mean, he did run mostly 11 personnel. And if you look at Seattle, what they just did, they have Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Jackson Smith and Jigba. So they were three deep at wide receiver, like three premium investments, I would say. And the Bears could be looking to replicate kind of that same formula. So I would expect it, like, honestly, they could double dip. They could, you know, hit this position at all points in the draft.
And it's interesting that you say replicating that formula. And this is it. We're going to start getting into some more schematic talk here with it for the Bears. But it's because their formula, it's not really normal, right? Because usually a team who's going to run a lot of 12 personnel isn't going to have two slot receivers on their roster. And they had, like you said, Jackson Smith and Jigba and Tyler Lockett, two guys who are really a lot of people would box into that slot receiver role. So do you think that that's something that you can – Bears are kind of scheme diverse with some of these receivers where it might be a slot guy, it might be an X receiver, it might be something in between, or do you think that they're kind of going to be looking to something more specific?
Well, I think the beauty of DJ Moore is that he can be anything, right? Like he can play from the slot. He can be your Z, kind of like move him wherever you want. And he could also be your X one-on-one guy. I mean, I feel like once – like it kind of took a while for DJ Moore to kind of find his groove. But once they kind of just made him the X, the number one guy, then that's when I think he started to really find his footing with the Bears. So, I mean, you could do really whatever you want with him, and that kind of opens the door for all types of mold of receivers. And that's what I kind of like about where the Bears are working from right now, I don't know if they're going to like go out and say like, hey, we need our Tyler Lockett and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I think they're just going to look at the best player and see how that fits in with DJ Moore because he's so versatile.
Yeah, and so, man, we both said it there, like X receiver, Z receiver. Can you kind of describe what you mean by those for the audience and for me? Because I don't know Z well. I know what an X is, but that's about it.
Sure. So Z is just the receiver that lines up off the line of scrimmage a lot of the time. So they can be – so like Z and Y can be kind of interchangeable. Y I kind of think more of like as a tight end slash slot receiver, like solely that. Whereas Z, you're kind of like the speed guy, I would say. I mean, you could be used in a bunch of different ways, but you're kind of the guy that – your offense wants you to scheme up free releases for you. So you're not having to deal with contact. You're not having to deal with isolation coverage. Whereas that is what the X receiver does. They are like your one-on-one guys, like just line the guy up on the outside, let him run a slant and beat the defender across from him. And he's going to get open every time, which is like what DJ Moore can do. And I feel like if you're looking at like Shane Waldron's offense, that was more so DK Metcalf, whereas the Z was more so Tyler Lockett, who was kind of like your vertical move guy, right. Whereas Jaxon Smith-Njigba was like just like a true slot.
So what would you say is like really important for the Z? So you say free releases, so I would assume like foot speed is going to be a major thing there.
Yeah, I would say like foot speed and like option route ability, I think, which is like important for the slot too. Again, like I think just versatility across the board, being asked to do multiple different things, because that's what Z is, like you're lining up everywhere. So yeah, I mean, it really depends what you ask your Z receiver to do. If you're looking at like more so a Tyler Lockett type of Z, I would say vertical, getting vertical. Like that's what they did a lot with him. At least like that's when he was at his best. So I think that, and there's a lot of options like that we'll talk about in this draft class.
Yeah, and so for the Bears, is there any traits, any things that you're trying to key in on as to what you think would really fit this scheme or fit their roster and really just be a strong fit for the team?
I think I'm always going to look for – I don't know if this is what the Bears are going to be looking for, but I'm always looking for guys who can separate. I think that is what, like, the best receivers, the most efficient offense you could possibly run currently in the NFL is guys that generate open throws. And I know a lot of the league is zone, right? So, like – a lot of guys are open against zone. That's not really a skill, but the guys on like your obvious pass downs on those like important money third downs, you know, you can go to, you can keep defenses honest by having to play those guys one-on-one because you have so many of them, you can't really double cover anybody. I feel like that is like what separates the best wide receivers. And that's really what I look for when I'm scouting these guys.
Yeah. And it's funny because you say like a lot of the league is zone, but it's, watching college tape, like I, you know, spending all year watching NFL tape and then spending, you know, since December watching college tape has made me realize just, I already knew this, but it really just hammered it home how much of the NFL has really adopted the man match principles.
Yes.
Because it's like, I'm seeing spot drop zones in college and it's just like, this doesn't happen in the NFL anymore. So that separation is key, right?
Yeah, it's so key. And the thing is, too, Q, which like drives me kind of nuts about watching college film is like you're looking for stuff that's translatable with some of these guys. Like when I have to make those cut-ups for some of the videos I do, it takes me so long because you're looking for examples to use how it's going to translate to the NFL. Because like you said, it's very few and far between for a lot of these guys because like a lot of these colleges are just spread offenses and they're like dropping aid and like you're not really learning anything from these guys. So yeah, it can be tough, but some guys definitely flash it more than others.
All right. Well, what do you say we get into a few of these prospects now? Or actually, let's go through any of these comments here first. So first we got Luke O'Grady here, motion guy, a lot of time talking about the Z receivers. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And then Steve Letizia, Chicago Football Connection. I better hear some Javon Baker talk. Steve, we'll get some in there at the end for you. Now let's jump in. Starting off with Jermaine Burton out of Alabama. And I actually just watched some of this guy for the first time today. And he's interesting. What do you think of him, Tom?
Very unique player. I know you can't modify unique, but that's like the best way I can describe him. My comp for him was actually Tyler Lockett, which we were just having that discussion. I think he is one of those receivers that looks like kind of like a slot receiver, but he plays better on the outside. Like, I think he's best on like vertical routes on the outside. He can kind of run the entire vertical route tree, take the top off, finds himself behind defenses a lot. And that's the thing with him too. Like, he tested very well. Like, he was very explosive in his jumps and he ran pretty decent. I think he ran like a 4.45, but there's some guys that just have like a knack for getting behind the defense. Like, they're not like necessarily like very explosive. They're not like the Xavier Worthies of the world, but they're just like pretty crafty in how they get behind the defense. And I kind of feel that way for Jermaine Burton. But I also like how he separates short and intermediate too. Like, I'm a really big fan of that aspect of him on his tape. Really, the only like big holes I would say that are missing in his game is that he's not very dynamic after the catch. I think he's like very much a possession vertical receiver to his core, kind of like Tyler Lockett. Like, there's so many clips of Lockett just like going down once he catches the ball. Same kind of thing with Jermaine Burton. And then he hasn't been super productive throughout his college career. It's been okay. I know some of his situation, you know, playing at Alabama kind of hurt that, and playing at Georgia too. But I still think that like there's a lot of meat left on the bone where he could honestly be even a better pro than he was in college.
Yeah. And the thing that really stood out to me with him was, and like you said, he's like a slot receiver size. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but a smaller looking receiver. But his go up and get it was shocking. Yeah. Like, his ability to go up, high point the football, get above the defender, and time everything up to where he's not giving timing away to the corner, and being able to give himself the best chance at the football was shocking, honestly, to see from him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that plays way bigger than his size. I probably should have started off with that too. I think whenever I'm looking at a receiver, again, I'm looking at how you separate, how good of a route runner you are, but those aspects of your game that could be like the gravy portions of it, he definitely has that. He plays way bigger than his size. I'm pretty sure he had like a 52% career contested catch percentage per PFF, which is well above the average. So yeah, that's definitely an aspect of his game you like as well.
Yeah, and his foot speed seemed great. Like, his release package and foot speed, yes, I thought was pretty impressive. And like you said, with the Z receivers getting the free releases kind of off, or not necessarily free releases, but being off the line of scrimmage to give them space on that release, I feel like that's something this guy could really excel with.
I totally agree. I think that's like one of the best ways you can use him. He definitely fits more of a Z receiver that can play in the slot some, but like can also play on the outside. I'm telling you, like, he's a little bigger than Tyler Lockett, but their games are so similar. Like, how you want to use them are so similar, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I just pulled up. It says he's 6 foot, and I didn't realize that watching him. He didn't feel 6 foot.
Yeah, 196 too at the combine. So like, he's a bigger 6 foot, but like ultimately like not too big of a receiver.
Yeah. All right, next guy we got here, or let's see, we got one comment. Let's roll through it. Luke O'Grady wants to hear about Javon Baker as well, so we'll definitely get to him at the end there. But next guy we got here is Troy Franklin out of Oregon. Speedster. He pretty much torched my Texas Tech Red Raiders up and down the field week three last year. What do you think of him?
So I think he's like one of the more polarizing players, receivers in this draft class. I think some people have him as like a top five receiver, or some people have him as like a third rounder. I think he'll obviously be somewhere in the middle. That's probably where he is for me as well. I still got to put the testing numbers to these guys and how they affect my grading. But as a deep, like you said, as a deep receiver, I really like him. Like, I think there's a lot to like there. He's very quick going vertical off the line of scrimmage. And I think DBs kind of realize his speed, and he can kind of play off that with running routes, coming back to the football, like and kind of like leave defenders in the dust that way. But I thought with him is he was such a weird fit for the NFL game, because he plays primarily on the outside, kind of like an X receiver, runs the X receiver route tree, which is kind of limited, yet he's only like 6'2", 176 pounds. Like, that's not what you think of as an X receiver. Like, X receivers are your DK Metcalfs, your DJ Moore of the right world. Like, those are bigger guys that can deal with contact. And the problem with Troy Franklin is, like, I don't really think he has the shiftiness to play in the slot. Like, I don't think you really want him running like short and intermediate routes, like making a living out of that. Like, I think he's best when he's going vertical. So he's really kind of a catch 22 for me. There's parts of his game that I like. I just wonder if it's going to translate as well, given that like he's a good athlete, not a great one, and is kind of undersized. Like, he can't get away with running the DK Metcalf route tree because he's not 6'3", 225 pounds.
Right. He's not going to play bully ball with you with inside yes. 10. And he's probably not, like you said, I'm looking at his agility testing right now, and it's, you know, underwhelming.
Yes.
But I was honestly a little surprised by his ability to, at speed, be able to stop and cut.
Yes.
Like, that was impressive, but his agility isn't necessarily, which is interesting. And the thing that really stood out to me about his speed, I thought at least, it was more long speed. It wasn't instant acceleration as much.
Definitely more of a build-up guy. I think you see that on his tape. And I think PFF just released some of their GPS numbers. And, like, whenever he's going vertical, he's, like, one of the highest guys. And maybe your 40 is not going to capture that entirely, because his 40 was, like, good. Didn't blow you out of the water. But I think he plays faster than maybe he tested in terms of just straight-line speed. But I think the agilities you brought up are a great point, because that's what you see on tape. Like, when he has to, like, cut in for an in-breaker, it's not as smooth. Like, he lets DBs get back into him because he's kind of rounding out his route. So it's just definitely something to keep to monitor. He's a very weird fit. I compare him to Romeo Doubs, because Romeo Doubs, like, is a vertical receiver and, like, a guy you want him playing on the outside, not really in the slot, but, like, also not, he's never going to be like a great wide, like, he's going to be like a wide receiver three, fringe wide receiver two type.
Yeah. And so, to your point with the build-up speed, I mean, a 4.440 after running a 1.6 10-yard split, that's really impressive. You know, yeah. After the first 10 yards, he's gone. But it's mm-hmm. those first 10 yards that take him, like, on Raz, that's a 4 on the 10-yard split.
Gee, I did not know that. 40. Wow.
Yeah. Well, at least on the – I don't know how it ranks in the overall, like, or the all-time Raz. Mm-hmm. But in the current draft class, I mean, that's a pretty big deviation there. And man, there was something, and I feel like I'm a little weird with just the way I look at, like, some of the body mechanics when I see guys running. I'm like, does that guy have short legs? And it feels like he's running, like, stubby sometimes, but then when he's in the open field, he lets it rip and he can really open his gate. But I don't know. There's something about his, it's like he's taking small steps sometimes before he's gotten to full speed, and maybe that's to help him cut better or something like that. But it just looked a little different to me.
I think that's I think that's an interesting theory. I'd have to go back and watch it, because I totally agree with you. Like, something seems off. Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's something's, like, not natural about his game, but, like, he makes it work, to his credit. But yeah, like, that was like, I just came away wanting more a little bit. But, like, the production too, that's probably something we should have mentioned, off the charts. I mean, production is really important for wide receivers. At least we've seen that over the years. Like, production, just producing in college, having a lot of yards, being efficient when you're targeted is really important, because that's usually, like, Puka Nacua is a perfect example, was a stud college receiver in the NFL, didn't test great, didn't really matter, right? Like, he's still really productive. He's kind of an outlier. I'm not saying, like, every guy is like that, but I would say, honestly, production matters more than your athletic traits. So that's going to be important for him, because he's, like, in terms of this receiving class, like, a top five receiver in production.
Yeah. And man, I just thinking about the RAS scores. I mean, so we have it. We have the agility testing for Troy Franklin already. I just can't wait for the pro days to be done. So yes. We have more of the agility testing.
Data points.
Really yes. Get an idea on that stuff. But moving on to our next guy here, Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. And there's a lot of opinions out there about him right now. It feels like he's starting to become pretty polarizing, as far as some people think he's, you know, wide receiver 4 in this class. Some people think he's not even a third round pick. But what do you think about Brian Thomas?
So he's actually the consensus wide receiver. If you're just looking at the Athletics draft board, who, like, they take, like, every major media outlet's draft rankings, he actually is the wide receiver 4. On the consensus board. And yeah, I don't see that. I can see why he's very polarizing, because the traits are very tantalizing among these receivers. I mean, he's probably, it's like him and A.D. Mitchell that are, like, the best all-around athletes. But unlike Troy Franklin, like, I don't really see, even though he has way more traits than Troy Franklin, their games are pretty the same. Like, they both win vertically, and you're kind of wanting more everywhere else. That's what I don't really understand why Brian Thomas is being viewed so much higher than some of these other guys, because while it is great to be able to win deep, I don't really think you can make a, like, be a true wide receiver to, like, reliable down in, down out, being a volume wide receiver if you're just going to win deep. And I think Brian Thomas has the traits to develop, like the movement skills to develop, because he is that good of an athlete. But at the same time, like, that's still a projection. Like, and at wide receiver, I think it's kind of dangerous to project, right? Like, projects usually don't work out at the wide receiver position. Like, it's guys that can already know how to run routes, can get open at all levels of the field. And, like, I still think as, like, a short and intermediate route runner, you're still kind of waiting to see those elements of his game grow.
Man, it is hard to assess people in that LSU offense.
That too.
It really is. Like, I watched a few games from him, and it was just like, man, these deep routes are nice. And this guy, he can pick up speed and, like, fast, and he can fly by guys. I even thought he had some nice releases, but I only saw him run like three route concepts. Yes. It felt like, so it's, I don't know what he can actually do when three quarters of what he's running is either a curl or a go.
And that's the problem, right? And I think that that honestly tells me a lot about, like, what they're comfortable with him doing, because this was a three-year guy who played. Like, I don't know if he ever, like, started consistently the 2 years prior, but, like, it took until year three for him to really hit his stride. And for a guy that's, like, so highly touted, you'd like to see him produce, like, throughout his college career. Like, his average or his yards per route run over his career is pretty low. And that kind of goes back to, like, he didn't really figure it out until this year, where they kind of figured out how to use him correctly. And I think that was just going vertical. So, like, again, that's why, like, I have a hard time putting him so much above. Like, he could very well develop into, like, an all-around receiver, but, like, there's no indication on his tape that tells you, like, he's there yet.
Yeah, and it throws even another wrench in there when you start to question, well, Jaden Daniels just didn't throw vertical last year. You know, so it's like chicken or the egg you end up with. And it's that LSU offense gives me fits. Like, it's when I play Madden, I don't play very much anymore, but when I do, I always just get as mobile a quarterback as I can find and run, like, the version that they have of four verts and the guy in the slot is running like a little slant.
Yes.
And I just run that over and over and over. If my first read's gone, I hit the slant. If the slant's not there, I wait an extra second and I run. And I feel like that's what the LSU offense was.
You're not too far off. Like, you're not too far off. They might have taken they might be running Ash Madden. You're not too far off.
But yeah, Thomas, the traits are incredible.
My comp for him was Christian Watson, who I think is the same.
Yeah.
I mean, look how the Packers used him early on to get him involved. It's like crossers and go balls. Like, just use the speed.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're going to have to do with Brian Thomas, and kind of just hope he figures out the rest later.
Yeah. We have another comment here from Thomas Gage saying that this conversation should be about 2 minutes long. Marvin Harrison Jr. at 2 and Xavier Leggett or Worthy in the second. Time for dinner. We're not going to get into the whole trade down conversation. Yeah. Because we are talking wide receivers strictly. So we'll just move it on to the man. We thought Brian Thomas Jr. got people all bothered. Keon Coleman. This is the most divisive conversation you can have in the wide receiver prospects, I feel like.
Yeah, he is super divisive. I think people are kind of coming to grasp with what Keon Coleman is now. He was rumored to be, I think, wide receiver 4 very early on. He had that breakout game against LSU, and then his season was kind of up and down from there. I like Keon Coleman. Like, I like that I know what Keon Coleman is. I think he's like a Cedric Tillman, Kenny Golladay type, where he's big, 6'4", 215 pounds. He's big. He's physical. He can win by being physical and kind of leveraging his separation. Is that going to be for every offense? No. Like, is he going to be like a high-end wide receiver in the top 10 wide receivers? I don't ever think so. But if he can be like a wide receiver 2/3, and like I said, all these guys from that we just kind of talked about are in that kind of range for me, then I think, like, there's a role he can serve in an offense. And I like what I know he's good at.
Yeah, man. So I hadn't watched much of him until today. I watched two games today, and one of them was the Clemson game. And it was just like, you know, ho-hum, solid game. And then Florida State's trailing in the two-minute warning, and the dude just takes over.
Yes.
Like, he just, in the end zone from, I think it was like 20 yards out, Jordan Travis just tosses one up to him for the last play of the game, and he just dunks on the corner. Like, that, I love seeing that in really any position that I scout. Like, it's hard, you don't really see it in offensive line. Tight end, again, it's not something you really notice a lot. Like, maybe you'll get chances, like if you're Brock Bowers, to do that.
Right.
But for the most part, no. Edge rusher and D-line is where I typically notice it, because I tend to stay in the trenches most of the time. But those guys who can up their performance in those big moments is something that I really care about, and something that I feel like Coleman provides at the college level. But it's just the question, can he provide it at the NFL level?
Yeah, and that's the thing with Coleman is, like, for as much like high-end reps there are on his tape, those moments, I think there was a couple moments where he just kind of took over games. LSU, Clemson, I think at Miami he had a really big punt return to kind of put them in position to win that game. The problem with Coleman is, like, what he's really good at is, like, not the first thing you want to say about a wide receiver. Like, he's a contested catcher, like, again, which is kind of scary when projecting him to the NFL. And then all of, like, the underlying stats, yards per route run, all that stuff is, like, well below the average. So, again, I think he's good enough at that to where it will translate to some degree at the NFL. But again, that's why I think, like, those, some of those limitations will, like, keep him down the pecking order on a receiving core. But, like, there's still some stuff he can provide. Like, you still need some of those elements on your team, which is why I think he's one of the only receivers in this class that can give it to you in this range of the draft.
Now, so at the start of the show, we talked a fair amount about how DJ Moore can be your X. But what about Keon? Like, how would you feel about Keon Coleman being your X and DJ Moore being your Z?
I think it makes sense. I think it can make sense to some extent. Like, I don't think you want Keon Coleman solely to be your one-on-one guy, because, again, like, he doesn't really separate. Like, he does separate with leverage. So, like, whatever quarterback he ends up with better be throwing, like, right on time. Matt Stafford and Kenny Galladay are, like, the perfect example. Like, Kenny Galladay wasn't good anywhere else. But when he's with Stafford, Stafford would just, like, blindly throw him the ball. And you kind of need guys, quarterbacks, to do that, because their leverage is there, like, in a split second. And if you wait a little bit, it's going to be gone. DBs will be on them, and that's how passes get broken up. So, again, like, I don't want to, like, sit here and say he'd be my first choice at X receiver. Like, I want guys who are able to separate. But if that's the role he serves, like, I think you can be okay. Again, wide receiver two, wide receiver fringe, like the wide receiver three fringe type of player, in my opinion.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as you say that, that's something that I noticed watching him. I remember thinking, like, man, this guy, he understands how to leverage the corners really well, because he needs to. He's not going to be open if he doesn't.
Right.
And it dawned on me, I think it was when I was talking to Robert at the Senior Bowl, it was like something about Jaden Reed we were talking about. And it was like, man, I told him the whole time I was watching Jaden Reed last year, and Jaden Reed was, you know, he had a good rookie year. He was a good pick. He had good tape, but I couldn't take my eyes off the other receiver. I didn't know who it was. And he's like, oh, that's Keon. I was like, oh, that was Keon Coleman. Okay, I'm kind of sold on Keon Coleman now, because I loved his Michigan State tape. Mm-hmm. But then he goes and runs a 4.6. I cool down a little,
right?
But the 10-yard split still came in really strong. The explosion numbers still came in really strong. I think you can easily do worse than Keon, as you know, you're saying too. But he might not be your top choice there.
Yeah, definitely not mine. I'm sure he'll probably fall down my order a little bit, especially when I include the testing. But again, like, I don't want to double knock him, because I wasn't expecting him to test great. Like, he doesn't run fast on tape. I don't know why everyone, like, their mind was blown. They're like, oh my God, Keon Coleman ran a 4.6. Like, what did you think he was going to run? Like, he's just not very fast on tape.
Yeah. So now we're going to get to a guy who you know, you deduct what, 4 or 5 inches, maybe 25 pounds, and give him just like double the speed. You got Xavier Worthy out of Texas. What do you think of this kid?
So I really like Xavier Worthy. I think if, again, and we don't want to get into the wormhole that is like if the Bears trade down from 9 and get into the second round, but like if they were to do something like that where they're in range with drafting an Xavier Worthy, I think he complements DJ Moore and fits a role in this offense as kind of like your Z receiver so, so well. He obviously, like, what else is there to say about his speed? He just broke the 40-yard dash record. He plays really fast. He is super fast. But a lot of times when guys are that fast, like a John Ross, like DeVontez Walker in this class, they're just fast. Like they can't really stop on a dime. They can't really change directions in a fluid manner to run routes because they're just so highly wound and so fast in a straight line. It's like really hard to do that. That's kind of the
The faster you're going, the harder it is to turn. I mean,
exactly. Physics
at some level.
So that's kind of the beauty of Worthy's game because he can do that. Like he can run routes. Like he is a good route runner, a good separator, especially gets off coverage. If you look at how the Dolphins kind of used Tyreek Hill this year, they got him in motion a ton. They got him free releases that way because like defenders aren't going to stay on the line of scrimmage if Tyreek Hill is running at full speed right before the snap. So Texas did a little bit of that with Xavier Worthy. And like that's really where he dominated. If he gets free releases and is able to like work in space down the field against off coverage, that guy's going to dominate because teams have to respect his speed, and they're going to be playing really off of him. So that's really what I like about his game. The problem is he's 165 pounds. So if like you use him as a conventional wide receiver, you line him up on the line of scrimmage, you expect him to get open against contact. I think that's where he's going to struggle a little more. Because if guys get their hands on him, the rep is over. He's just too small. He gets pushed around a ton.
Now, do you think he was playing at 165 last year? Like, what do you think? You think he was more like 175 or?
So he was listed at 172 pounds. And I think he gradually was putting on weight every year at Texas because he exploded as a freshman. And then it wasn't as good. But I don't really think that was on him. I think that was more of the scheme he was in and whatnot. Anyway, not worth discussing, but yes, he was listed at 172 pounds. I definitely think he cut some weight to beat the record.
Yeah.
He probably knew he could. And I don't think he'll probably play that light, but either way, I mean, 175 pounds, 6'1", you're still pretty small.
Yeah. So what do you think of his ability to beat press when they're not giving him that free release? Say that, you know, you get one of the faster cornerbacks in the league saying, I'm just going to give it to this kid. And how good is he at beating the press and handling that?
I think like guys like him that are super small, the Devontae Smiths of the world, like the Tank Dells, like it's like a spectrum, right? Like those guys have to win by just being shifty and quick. Like they can't win right. Late in the route, right? They have to win early on, quick separation, just get past them and blow by them. Whenever guys get hands on them, it's over. Like it's hard for them to get off that because they're just too frail. I think with Xavier Worthy, like he could get better at probably using his hands more and kind of fighting press that way, but he just wants to get by you and run past you because he can, like that's what he does. So I think the best example of like a smaller guy who can just get away with that is Tank Dell. Like Tank Dell plays on the outside. Like he's not a slot receiver because he's just so quick. You can't really get hands on him. I don't think Xavier Worthy is that quick, but there's elements of that to his game. Like he can play some on the outside. My comp for him was Rashid Shaheed, who's kind of in the same vein.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So, man, that if you're running timing concepts,
mm-hmm.
and you have a receiver like this who, you know, is going to be as shifty as they can to avoid the press and avoid someone getting their hands on him, how does that play into the timing concepts within the structure of the play?
Again, I think he's a guy you don't really want to, if you don't have to, don't line him up and just like expect him to be a wide receiver, like get creative okay. with him, like use him in motion, get him, put him at the behind the line of scrimmage, put him like with stacked formations. Like that's how the Dolphins were kind of letting Tyreek Hill just kind of run through defenses. You give him all these favorable looks, like he can just use that speed and gash you because again, teams are going to have to account for that somehow. So I think that's the best usage you could possibly do with him. And then luckily the Bears kind of, or Shane Waldron was kind of doing that stuff for Tyler Lockett like last year. Like he was exploring with that. So I think with Xavier Worthy, that speed's even more dangerous with him, and you could really do some cool stuff if you were to add him.
Interesting. And that's, I kind of put you on the spot there, but that just, that popped in my head. It's a question that I've like found myself wondering, but never really seeked out the answer for. So interesting. But moving on here to the guy, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia. I watched three games of this guy yesterday and I want more. I want more snaps per game. I want more games of tape. I want to see everything this kid can do because I didn't see anything he couldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly said. I think most people are caught up to like how good he really is because, you know, when you see a guy named Ladd McConkey who's white and I'm the small, he's like a little smaller. Like you're going straight to the Julian Edelmans of the world, the Danny Amendolas, but that's really not his game. And he proved that at the combine, right? Like this is a legit wide receiver who can be used everywhere, who's athletic, who's toasting DBs in the SEC, highest level of competition. And Daniel Jeremiah tweeted it. He kept seeing in his notes, like struggles covering Ladd McConkey because the guy's unguardable. He has a rare ability to stop and start. Like, I think that's what separates him the most. He obviously knows what he's doing as a route runner, but his ability to vary his speeds is what makes him unguardable. Mike Renner had a very bold comp for him. He compared him to Antonio Brown, but it was that ability, to the ability to just cut on a dime. And you really see that, I think, with Ladd McConkey. I mean, Q, you were down at the Senior Bowl. That guy couldn't be covered. Like, he was untouchable, right? Like, he was the best wide receiver there. And I think the route running, the quicks, and then the stop-start is just – he's just going to be an open target for a quarterback, and he's going to feast that way.
I want him to be a Bear. I mean,
so bad.
I mean, there were games where he only got 10 minutes of tape because that's all he played.
Mm-hmm.
But in those 10 minutes, he played inside. He played outside. He was blocking his –
yes.
Every ounce of his being was going into a block. Like the effort was constantly there, no matter what he was being asked to do. And he was executing, it felt like, whatever they asked him to do. And it wasn't like this guy was typecast into a role. It was, this guy was their top receiver. He was asked to do everything. And it was just, I was blown away. Probably the best film grade I've given a receiver outside of MHJ.
Oh, wow. Okay. So have you watched like all the receivers yet? Or are you still kind of grinding through the tape?
No, I watched the top three guys for sure.
Okay.
I didn't give their film grades weren't as high for me.
Wow.
Their potential, their ceiling was higher. Fair enough. Their floor might've been higher. Like, cause we give grades based on what, film, ceiling, floor, athleticism, and versatility. And then other. But so the other factors there that aren't film, the top three did better. But just based purely on the tape, I loved McConkey.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And that's the hard part. You brought up a good point. Like there's only such limited, I guess, exposure to him because Georgia rotates the receivers a ton. We'll talk about with that for the next guy because I feel like that's why he left Georgia. And yeah, it's hard. He's not used as much as the top guys, but if you look on a per route basis, he's just as efficient as any of the top guys. Like that's the kind of the beauty of him. And you kind of just want to see more usage because I thought he was the best receiver on Georgia. The last thing I'll say about McConkey is that the beauty with him is I think what separates from a lot of the guys we just talked about is he's a menace after the catch. I've been actually meaning to talk about you. I've been like trying to put together a production score. I'm still kind of like hammering out the details of it, but I did like your forced missed tackle percentage for each of these guys for all the top receivers. And he was second behind Malik Nabers. Like he was the only one that was remotely close on a per catch basis, how many forced missed tackles he caused. So again, he's a guy you can get in space and like let him do things after the catch. Like he's just so well-rounded. The only real downside of his game is his hand sometimes can be a little suspect, and then he is on the smaller side, right? He's only like 6 foot,
yeah.
186 pounds.
Yeah, and so that actually just made me think with the grade, like some of it is a lack of volume. Why is grade so strong for me? Because, I mean, I sit here, I have five categories for each play. I have a zero, I have a check plus, I have a plus plus, I have a check minus, and a minus minus. And when there's only 20 plays to grade, your odds of getting the check minus and the minus minus are a lot lower. So like, and those won't, my final grades won't just be based on a calculation like that.
Right.
That's just how I build my baseline. Like the, before we put out our final board, I'll go in and normalize it all to where I think it should be. But that's kind of how I compare, try and keep it consistent.
Yeah. And yeah, that totally makes sense. And that's, again, that's kind of a wrench in his evaluation, but the nice thing about Ladd McConkey to kind of fill in those gaps, arguably the biggest offseason winner. I mean, destroys the Senior Bowl, destroys the combine. Like you, everything, all those like kind of gaps you wanted to be checked, he did in spades, which is why I'm really fired up about him.
All right. Next guy, Adonai Mitchell. Is it, did I even pronounce that right?
Yeah, I always
just hear AD Mitchell.
It's Adonai, yes.
Talk about guys who blew up the combine.
Yes.
Man, a 4.3440 at 205 pounds. His teammate Xavier Worthy was at 165. So 40 pounds heavier. And really, like, I mean, it's not a 4.22, but a 4.34 is still incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at all-around athletes, he had the best combine of any of these receivers. And if you're factoring in size, you're factoring in the jumps, you're factoring in the speed, I mean, he was the most complete athlete of any of these receivers, which is saying something, and given this is like one of the most athletic receiving classes we've ever seen. Adonai Mitchell is one of those guys. If you asked me if he's a top 10 receiver in 3 years, and you told me that, I'd say, yeah, like I could totally see it. If you asked me if he was like a wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4, kicking around on rosters, I would also believe it, right? And the reason I say that is his talent, his high-end reps are as good as anybody's in this class. They're as good as Marv's. They're as good as Neighbors. They're as good as Odunze. The problem is he has so many like low-end, low-effort reps at the same time where you're wondering like, why aren't you running at full speed? Why are you taking this route off? And he was asked about it at the combine. At his podium, and he's like, yeah, I don't run at full speed because I want to be able to stay on the field. I don't want to tire myself out. And it's like, well, you know, that I understand what he's saying, but like at the same time, like teams, I don't think are going to appreciate, you know, the smarts behind that one, as much as you're saying, is the case for you. So there's just some mind boggling, like routes where it doesn't even look like he's trying, but at the same time, the separation ability at that size, the ability to win at all three levels of the field, what he's able to do at the catch point. I mean, all of those things I am just a huge fan of. And I think he, amongst these receivers below the top three, he has the most upside to be a wide receiver 1.
So going back to that comment that he made at the combine, that actually makes me feel, maybe this is just false hope, but it makes me feel better about it because that answer sounds to me like the coaching staff at UT wants him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks everybody will understand that he doesn't say coach told me not to run full speed so I could stay on the field. He just would think that people would get that. That's where it's coming from. That's what it sounds like to me. Maybe that's optimistic thinking. But I mean, I saw some of those effort questions and there were a handful of plays where I felt like it was very real, mm-hmm. where his lack of going near top speed impacted the defender in front of him and helped the defender either get to the ball carrier, get to the receiver who did get the ball faster and cut off a running lane. But there were a ton of plays where it was never going his way.
Mm-hmm.
It was never going his direction. He had no impact on the play. Those ones don't worry me at all. Like, I won't mark those negative. I'll mark negative the ones where he's a decoy and he needs to be a decoy. Mm-hmm. And the defender realizes that he's not doing anything and catches on and is able to make a tackle after 15 yards were gained instead of 60. You know, those were the ones that irked me a little bit. But there were a lot fewer of those, and there were ones where Texas Sarkisian's offense at Texas
is
had
wonky.
A lot of one single reads and a lot of like, this is where the football's going. Everybody else just needs to keep their guy where they are. And if knowing that and hearing that answer that he gave at the combine, I mean, obviously, if I was the team, I'd ask him to give a little more information about what he meant by that. But I can't have that. So it just generally makes me feel better that that was his answer as to why.
Yeah, I could totally see some of the same things you do on tape and like the one read stuff, the plays he knows he's not getting the ball. I think there's a lot of plays where he thinks he's not getting the ball. And he's usually right, but there are some plays where like he'll like half ass a slant and then just like get thrown the ball and he wasn't expecting it. And Quinn Ewers, you know, isn't the greatest college quarterback ever either. I think like that had something to do with it. I went back and watched some of his Georgia.
It's a good thing he went back another year.
Exactly. I went back and watched some of his Georgia tape, and I don't think you saw that as many times, but at the same time, those receivers rotate so in and out. It's like, I think he was just trying to make the most of the opportunities he was given. And then in Texas, when he is in an expanded role, again, it's just something that teams are going to have to get to the bottom to. Like, okay, that's somewhat of an insightful answer, but I still think there was a little too many reps where he's just like not running as fast as he should. And honestly, Q, I don't know about you, but I was kind of surprised he ran a 4.34. Like, there are times where he looks fast, but there aren't like reps on his tape where he's like lining up on the outside, releasing past someone vertically and like striding away from them. Like, I felt like a lot of those situations resulted in contested catches. I didn't really see him play up to the 4.34 speed.
There were a few times where I thought he did. It seemed like he varied his speed a lot.
Yes.
Which made it hard to gauge.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Right.
There were times where it's just like you're going vertical and it was like, well, he's not separating. And
yes.
But then there were times where it felt like he had, you know, long striding, just no one's going to stick with him either. So I'm not sure how much I feel like it's there, the 4.3 speed. I'm just not sure why it wasn't more consistent.
That's very fair. I think that's a beautiful way to characterize it. The thing with Adonai Mitchell, and maybe I didn't harp on it enough, I don't want this to be negative. He's my wide receiver 4, so I'm obviously very high on him. The movement skills are so rare at that size. Like, he has some wiggle off the line of scrimmage in his releases, like that is comparable to Davante Adams, in my opinion. Like, that the shake is so effortless. Like, guys can't even touch him because he's just so fluid off the ball, off the line of scrimmage. Where he'll fake one way and go the other in a split second. That rep against Alabama against Kool-Aid McKinstry, where he just slants him up to score a wide open touchdown. I mean, there's so many clips like that where he doesn't get thrown the ball, and it's like this dude's gonna if he can play like that in the NFL, like he's gonna be a dominant one-on-one player. The problem too with him though, for as good as those reps are, is the production's not really there to back it either. So a very weird projection, but at the end of the day, I think the talent is just undeniable.
Speaking of talent that's undeniable, we got Romo Dunze up next from Washington. And what do you think about Romo?
I'm a huge fan. I think he's kind of polarizing. I think a lot of people are really high on him, like maybe have him as their wide receiver too. And then I think some like don't really see like a high-end wide receiver at the next level. The parts about Romo Dunze's game that I love, I don't think he gets enough credit for, is kind of like what we were just talking about with the A.D. Mitchell. He's so loose off the line of scrimmage. He's so good at just shaking guys free in one-on-one situations that I know he can be a consistent, reliable target that's going to get open against one-on-one coverage. Like, you can play in the line of scrimmage. And this is for a guy who's 6'3", 212 pounds, so who's big in his own right. And he can be that kind of isolation X-wide receiver who can win short, intermediate, and then deep. I don't know if he can win deep, obviously, but he's not like he doesn't have the most speed in the world. I think he wins more so with just ball skills and being able to attack the catch point down the field. But I really like him as a one-on-one receiver. Is he this like high-end athlete, clear the defense vertically? No, but I comped him to DeAndre Hopkins, who I think has a very similar skill set, like who just knows how to get open, is solid after the catch, kind of solid at everything else. But the main thing that he's going to be relied upon is like just winning one-on-ones.
Yeah. I mean, your point about the wiggle that he has, like he has such loose hips for a guy that big, and he can like, he's taking screen passes and getting yards after the catch and avoiding tacklers. It's guys that big don't do that often. It's just very impressive. And I've been saying ever since I watched an interview from him, I think it was like probably a month and a half ago, something like that. It was like, man, teams are going to love this dude.
Yes.
Like his personality, he seems like a leader on the team. He seems like a great kid as far as like the stuff he's done in the community and the work that he puts in, just in the building, for everything his teammates, his coaches say about him is always sparkling. I think this guy's a plus person on and off the field. And I think that goes a long way when you combine it with his abilities and his production. I won't be surprised if teams have him wide receiver too. I don't know if the talent merits it over Neighbors, but I think the talent combined with everything they hear in the interviews, everything they hear from coaches and teammates, might push him over the edge there.
I totally agree. I can see a team falling absolutely in love with him. I can see the Bears falling absolutely in love with mm-hmm. him. The kind of person he is, the high character, the hits philosophy, you know, hits principles. Like, he screams that when you hear him talk. Well. Yeah. And the thing with him too at the combine, when he, like, this is just another example of it. He stayed until he ran like a 6.63 cone. He stayed until he ran, like, they weren't going to count his time. Then it was lower than it was, but he stayed there until he got it. Like, he still wanted to keep doing it. Again, that just screams like Matt Eberflus. if any receiver was able to do so.
Really though, that is football guy Matt Eberflus, yes. type of player right there. Speaking of Neighbors, let's move on to him. So Malik Neighbors out of LSU, I'd say the second most talented receiver in this class, and there's been some stuff that has come out recently about, I think it was a gun charge that he might have had. And apparently he transferred high schools, and there might be some red flags around that too. And that's one of the reasons why I think Odunze might pass him up. But it's not the talent. And for all we know, the high school thing is nothing. And the gun charge was a dumb decision by a 20-year-old kid, which we've all made dumb decisions. So I don't want to harp on the guy too hard over that stuff until you know there's more information. So what we see on the field is incredible.
Yeah, probably the most dynamic playmaker in this entire draft class. Like, if you're looking at every aspect of like how he creates positive yards, I honestly think he's more well-rounded in that regard than even Marv, because what separates Neighbors, I guess, from Marv, even though I do like Marv better, we'll obviously talk about him, is that Neighbors is the best receiver by far. It's not close after the catch in this entire draft class. His forced missed tackle percentage is a 30%. That means on 30% of his catches, he was forcing a missed tackle, which is absolutely absurd. He was like by far and away in his own strategy or in his own stratosphere in that regard. And you see that on tape, right? Like, he's like the type of receiver that can take a screen 60 yards of the house because he's just so dynamic after the catch. He's also, I think, can win at all three levels as a separator. I think there's still like some like technical polish that could happen with his game to where he's even a better route runner, but he's just such a unique mover and has like these really unique movement skills that just makes him so hard to cover, that even if he is just what he is right now, I just have no doubt about him being very successful from what he shows on the field. And this is also a guy, too, the last thing I'll say about him, on PFF's top speed GPS scores, he was even higher than Xavier Worthy. Like, he's by far the fastest player. He reaches his top speed more so than Xavier Worthy, which is pretty insane to say, given Xavier Worthy just ran a 4.21.
Who did you comp him to?
My comp for him was Brandon Ayuk, because Brandon Ayuk also like dominated at the college level. Again, another like unique movement skill guy who took his game to the next level, I think, over a 3-year period in the NFL, where he's like, you could argue he's like the best one-on-one receiver in the NFL right now. I think Neighbors has that. Like, I think he has that ability. He just needs some ironing out. But like, even if he is what he is right now, yards after the catch, still a good route runner, still a guy you can use in space and vertical. I just think he's a well-rounded package that is just a dynamic playmaker.
I really like Ayuk for him, because Ayuk is one of the few receivers. I'm trying to think if there's another guy who fits this kind of mold, but they make the craziest movements look so normal.
Yes.
And so easy. And it's just like, why can't everyone do that? And that's the way I feel about Neighbors too. So it's like that. I think that is a really strong fit there, because some of the stuff you see, it like the way that he'll bend a line, and like the mm-hmm. way that he'll just move out there around tacklers, it just looks like everything is in slow motion.
There was a route against Florida, I believe, where he's like running a dig from the slot, and like he didn't even push off the defender. He just like cut on a dime, but the defender was like hanging on to him, and he didn't even have to do anything. Like, he just ran the route like the defender wasn't there. The defender like went back like 5 yards. It was just like insane. Like, oh, stuff man, like that.
It looks so easy. It's like, yes. That defender must suck. Like, why couldn't he do that?
Right. And the thing about him too is like he's obviously on the shorter size. I think he's listed at like 6 foot, but he's 200 pounds. Like, he's a bigger guy. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's bigger. Like, he's hard to bring down. So again, very, very unique guy, that he's my wide receiver too, just because I think the talent, physical talent, is a little bit more superior than Roma Dunze, even though he might not be as polished. I just think he can create more explosive plays, which is coming at such a premium in today's NFL. I mean, that's what defense's number one goal is to take away.
Yeah, I mean, he's, I think, a unique talent. Like, yeah. I mean, I love Romo Dunze, but I think Romo Dunze fits a mold that we've seen before.
Yes.
And it's seen multiple times before, and I'm not sure Neighbors fits a mold that we see all that often, which becomes really interesting. Moving on to our final official guy here. So we'll get to a few after this, but Marvin Harrison Jr. of Ohio State, the obvious wide receiver one. You know, everyone's been talking about him for the last 2 years, it feels like, maybe 3 years. Obviously, son of the Hall of Famer, former Indianapolis Colt. I hope he runs at some eventually.
I don't think he will.
I want to know. I don't either. And I don't like, I just want to know, you know, I want to know to compare what I can compare it to. But what do you see when you watch his tape?
I mean, he's a revelation, right? Like, in terms of like the athletic ability, the rare athletic traits paired with having a Hall of Fame wide receiver technician father, like, it's the perfect marriage, right? Like, he's this incredible athlete who is huge. This guy's a 6'3", 209 pounds, I believe he came in at the combine. So he's a big, big wide receiver, but moves so gracefully for that size and is already so polished as a route runner. I like to characterize, again, I think I said this when I was talking about Xavier Worthy, guys who win early in routes and guys who win late in routes. Keon Coleman is the guy that wins late in routes, right? Who, like, he needs to like kind of push off, win with physicality, and separate late in a route. Whereas Xavier Worthy, like, he needs to win early. If he's going up against press, like, he needs to shake the guy off the line of scrimmage and run by them as quickly as possible. The beauty of Marv is he can do both. He can win with quicks off the line of scrimmage. Like, he's such a fluid mover. Like, he crosses people over at 6'3", 210 pounds. But if guys get hands on him and he's running like a corner route, he can also separate with physicality. And you don't really see that. Like, that's what makes the best receivers so good, because they're not one dimensional. Like, they're so multifaceted. And the beauty of Marv too is, like, he wins at all levels of the field with those skill sets. He can win vertically by stacking a receiver. He can win short and intermediate by just being a good route runner. Like, he's the complete package at such a high level of physical talent that he's, in my opinion, the safest player in this entire draft class.
Yeah. I mean, I think you touched on everything there. I mean, and I am a huge fan of just about any player who grew up around the sport, around the NFL locker rooms, around watching grown men have to put in the work that it takes to last in this league, just because they know what they're signing up for. They know what they're going into, and they've been preparing for it their whole life. It's a different level of knowledge, of preparedness, of just, they're not just in it for the paycheck. They're in it for the glory of it. And that's something that I just love to see. And you got with this guy, you got with Marvin Harrison Jr., on top of all the traits he just said, I think you can't miss with him.
And I think you brought up a good point about, like, him being around the game so young, and being, obviously, because his dad was, you know, playing in the NFL. And the thing was interesting about the differences between the two is Marvin Harrison Sr. was a really small guy. Like, I don't know his listed height, but I think he was only like 170 something pounds. So this was a guy that kind of had to win with like route running, separation, and quicks. And when you look at a 6'3", 210-pound Marv, you're like, well, you don't have to win that way. Like, you're just more physically imposing than every other player in the secondary. But he does win that way. Like, that's the beauty of him. Like, he can win that way because he learned from his dad and he has that quick separation ability. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's the complete package, like, best wide receiver prospect that I've seen since Ja'Marr Chase, where you just know that guy's going to come in right away and be a wide receiver one, like top 10 wide receiver potential in his rookie year.
And hell, he made Kyle McCord look kind of okay.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Get to a quick comment here. Two comments. We got Rick in the comments asking what's the number one priority in free agency now that JJ got paid. Tom, what do you think about that one? I know you just did a free agent episode of the Bears Blog Boys podcast. If you're not following, go check it out. It's a great show. But what do you think the top priority is?
Edge. I think edge is the top priority. I know Ryan Poles isn't really known for making a whole lot of splashes in free agency, but I think the beauty of attacking edge in this free agency class is there's good guys at the top of the market. You can get a Danielle Hunter. You can get a Bryce Huff. Maybe even a Jonathan Greenard. And that way you're not pigeonholing yourself in the draft, where I think edge you're only going to get in the first round. Like there's not going to be a whole lot of options outside of the first round. Whereas like you can wait on receiver in the draft, like, cause we just talked about it. Like there's so many different options, but I would love coming into the draft, having both edge positions figured out to where you can now try to go up and get a Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, even a Marv, maybe possibly, like you can open yourself up to that possibility. To whereas if you don't, I mean, I don't know, like the Bears pass rush obviously took a big jump forward with Montez Sweat, but I still feel like it's not enough to where you want to be in this division where the offenses are so good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. And then one more comment here from Michael Turner. Any chance three QBs go first? Rumors Arizona loves Odunze. We trade our 9 in the future to move to 5 Harrison. I don't know if Harrison's going to go after Odunze. I mean, no, even if Arizona loves him, I don't know how they pass a team who knows what taking a generational wide receiver feels like after, you know, having Larry Fitzgerald there. I don't think that they're going to pass up on him. But I mean, hey, if Marv gets to 5, I'm team go get him. You know, but even then, I think you do worry about JJ McCarthy, potentially someone moving up for him at 5. 5 is just a hot spot for a trade up with the Chargers.
Yeah, I think there's still so much unknown about this quarterback class beyond spots 1 and 2, to where you really don't know who's going to go, what teams are interested in. I floated out the idea very early on that maybe the Bears could leverage a Justin Fields trade and maybe possibly even moving up a round 1 pick to move to 3 with the Patriots if they are looking to trade down. If that was on the table, I would absolutely do that for Marvin Harrison Jr. Like if you came away in this draft class with Caleb Williams, which is what we think they're going to do, and Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't care about the rest. Like you won the draft. Like that's like the best way you could start off, but I just don't really think it's realistic at this point.
I agree. All right, so let's get to a few other prospects. Any other guys that you're really just have your eye on or thinking about, just finish writing up, anything along those lines?
I do like Ricky Pearsall, the Florida wide receiver. I don't love him as much as like some of the other guys that fit his skills. So like I like Jermaine Burton. I like Ladd McConkey better, who I think fit more in that like Z receiver role. But I think if you're looking for like a late second round, early third round version of those two guys, I like Ricky Pearsall. I think can be really good at from the slot. He can win vertically. He's super shifty in his routes and he makes some spectacular catches. The problem with him is like, I don't ever think he's a guy you want to play on the line of scrimmage. Like he's just not very physical and he's not very good against contact. He kind of like runs in place cause he tries to be so shifty. But I do like him as like a wide receiver 3 possibility. If he was the 3rd best wide receiver on your receiving core, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
So when you see a guy like that, who like, I assume you're talking like on the release when he's almost running in place. How much shimmy is too much shimmy? Like when you're looking at a release,
there's definitely too much shimmy. I think it depends what route you're running. Obviously, like if it's timing, like you want to be in and out of your brakes and going.
Yeah.
That's the thing. What's nice about option routes, because you're not usually going up against press, and you usually have the time to kind of go one way or the other. Like quarterbacks are usually kind of waiting to read your leverage anyway, so you don't have to be super quick, which is why I think the best way to use him would be kind of in those roles to let him attack defenders in space. So yeah, there is such thing as too much shimmy for sure, because like quarterbacks can't wait all day. You know, they got to release at some point.
And with option routes, so like, can you explain those for a second?
Sure. So option routes are usually out of the slot, and you're usually reading a defender's leverage. So that's what like the Patriots were like during Tom Brady's heyday. Julian Edelman, think what he did. They're just like going, they're usually running a route in the slot, and they're going one way or the other based on the defender's leverage. So they're like impossible to cover because you're always wrong. They're always going to pick the leverage that they have on you. A lot of running backs do this. A lot of slot receivers do this. Even sometimes they have like vertical slot or vertical option routes, which you saw sometimes Ricky Pearsall did, like where he's running either a big out or a dig. So there's a lot of different things you can do with that. But basically what kind of skill set you need is someone who is super shifty. And I think that's really where Ricky Pearsall shines.
Okay. And then I think we owe Steve and Luke some Javon Baker talk. So what are your thoughts on Javon Baker?
I like Javon Baker. I think he's honestly, like, I would way rather take Javon Baker in the third round than I take Keon Coleman in the second round. I think they have somewhat of a similar skill set. I think Keon Coleman is a better route runner by far than I think Javon Baker is a better route runner than Keon Coleman by far. The problem is I just like didn't think he was as explosive in short areas. And he's obviously a little smaller. I don't think he was as physical like to uncover and separate in that way as a Keon Coleman. But I like Javon Baker. I just question the extra gear. Like when he was able to set DBs up and like won his leverage, he didn't really pull away from guys as much as I'd wanted to. Again, this was from a very limited sample. There's not a whole lot of tape on UCF, but that's kind of my overall thoughts on him when I watched him. It was just like he was decent. I didn't like see a super high-end wide receiver, though.
That makes sense. And then I haven't watched much of him, so I can't chime in too much there. But were there any other guys you wanted to mention or talk about?
Not necessarily. Honestly, I'm lower on some of the other guys that are getting a lot of hype at this stage, and I don't really think that's worth trashing those guys. I don't like to trash anybody. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, then that will do it for us. Thank you guys for listening, for sticking with us through this time, and make sure to go to ontapsportsnet.com. Check out our scouting reports. Tom's got a bunch of wide receivers written up over there. I've got a few wide receivers written up, handful of tight ends, O-line, some D tackles. So go check it out. We're at like 80, 85 reports over there now. So plenty of players for you to see while you're over there. If you're a Cubs fan, if you're a White Sox fan, if you're a Bulls fan, what else is there? There's Blackhawks. There's Chicago Fire.
We got Chicago sports locked down.
Yeah, it's all of it. We got college football over there. We got a betting segment there. We got it all. Play around the website. Check out all our different writing. We're writing articles, multiple articles per day, per segment per day, every day. So go check us out. Please make sure to leave us a rating on the Bears on Tap podcast. And go follow Tom, Tommy_NFL Draft on Twitter, and have a great night.
Thank you, y'all.